Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Tom, I don't think we had any big surprises with the draft tonight. We obviously will talk about the moves that were made with the top picks for Raw being Rhea Ripley, Seth Rollins, KO and Sammy, and the Judgment Day. No surprises there. Top picks by SmackDown included U.S. champ Austin Theory, which was, you know, likely Charlotte Flair, Usos sticking to SmackDown, the LWO, and Asuka. We'll, again, talk about all those picks. So I actually kind of want to start off, because we've got you on the post show today, with your take on the NXT picks, both tonight and from Friday on SmackDown. How do you, I was just very open-ended, how do you feel about the picks, the draft call-ups at this point?
Well, first of all, I agree with you that there were no real big surprises. I did make a rather rudimentary depth sheet going into this just to see if my evaluation of, you know, the order in which people might get picked, division by division, as I structured it, was on par with how the company was viewing it. And up until like halfway through round three, it was just, I mean, I was 100%. So really, no, I mean, I know you already spoke with Rich on Friday about how no, I mean, even after tonight, no factions or tag teams have been broken up. So nothing like that. And I preface with that to say that I kind of feel the same way about the NXT picks. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm excited about them. And now we've got, oh, who's that blonde one? I don't recognize. I'm taking the risk of having another show on in the background.
The Peacock, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, Nikki Cross, Johnny Gargano, and then, oh, and it's gone. And now I don't remember who the person on the right was. But, yeah, this is not going to work out well for me having another screen up. But I said those other things to say that I am excited for the NXT individuals, and I'm especially excited because apart from Solo Sikoa, this is the first like real crop of call-ups from NXT that we've gotten since the shift in power to Shawn running NXT and Triple H running the main roster. And these are all people that Triple H was involved in signing. These are all people who Triple H knows. This is not Triple H sending people to Vince, whom Vince is only aware of in a cursory sense. But there was nobody, let's see, even the people that I did not expect to get called up, just scrolling through my list to make sure I'm correct here. Yeah, everyone that I predicted made it except for Grayson Waller, and maybe he's on the supplementals here. And everyone who got called up that I didn't explicitly pick was somebody that I considered and then just didn't end up writing down because I was being more conservative with the fact that Triple H has brought back so many people over the past several months who had been let go from the company, and I just wasn't sure how many roster spots there were going to be. But I mean, they're taking very generously from NXT right now. But just glancing here, Zoe Stark, Caden Carter and Katana Chance, Cameron Grimes. They did not mention that Cameron Grimes was from NXT, and they did not show him at the Performance Center. So, you know, I mean, he hasn't been on NXT TV in a while, but they didn't call that out. But, yeah, those are pretty deadly, of course. That became very easy after last Tuesday night when they were written off of the show. But, yeah, just not very surprising picks, but I'm optimistic to see where they land. They're not all going to be world champions, but they'll find their places on the roster. And I think across the board, they're all people who I think have pretty strong positives going for them.
Was there a biggest surprise of anyone who got drafted to Raw or SmackDown from NXT?
The one that surprised me the most was Apollo Crews, just because he hasn't been back in NXT for very long. And one of the key issues with Crews from the beginning was that he did not get enough time to cook in NXT. And And it just never, ever clicked for him, either in his initial NXT run nor on his various incarnations on the main roster. And so when he went back to NXT, I was not excited at first, and especially when they gave him this like psychic premonition gimmick, which is just ridiculous. But even with the ridiculous gimmick, I started to respect what Apollo Crews was laying down, and just with his promos, with his matches, he was starting to do stuff that impressed me in ways that he had never achieved with me before. So not that I don't think he belongs on a Raw or a SmackDown, not by any means, but it was working. And with the main roster so very populated right now, I'm just not sure where he fits in. So that one's a surprise to me. But everybody else makes sense, I think.
One critique I had of the order, one of them, is Cameron Grimes going last. It just sends a signal he's not a big deal. He was after Shotzi and after Rick Boogs. And if you're going to bring him in and you have high hopes for him, and I think they ought to, the story they told is in the draft room, nobody was in a big hurry to get him. I mean, granted, he at least didn't go in the supplemental portion on Raw Talk or Talking Smack or whatever that was. What's it called now?
SmackDown Lowdown?
Lowdown on SmackDown Lowdown, something like that. So at least he was on, you know, the main show. But, man, if to me that just is signaling to us, he'll be added to the roster, but don't expect a big push.
Yeah, same goes for Zion Quinn, who just got called up as a free agent, according to Raw Talk. I've tracked him for years and been speaking about him recently on Bonus Point on VIP. And he's started to find his lane recently, but he had been plateauing for a very long time. So he joins Von Wagner granted, it's a very shallow free agent depth chart, but he's right next to Von Wagner on that particular side of things. Just, they're throwing more people at us. I don't see any NXT names. No, just a bunch of runoff, a bunch of people that I did not expect to get drafted on the main show. And speaking of, just being brutally honest with myself when I was putting together my predictions here, I did not have Cameron Grimes being drafted on the main show because I'm just not I like the guy as much as anybody else. I've enjoyed the best of his work on NXT, but I'm just not sure, you know, like if the 24/7 division was still around, we would only be a couple months away from him running around in it, I think. So that's a brutal statement, but I'm just not sure how high he is going to rise on the main roster. So it was, I'll say, a pleasant surprise, but a little bit of a surprise to see him go on the national television show as opposed to the Peacock runoff.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it is what it is, and that is where they chose to draft him. And so, it is telling that they're not looking at him as a big deal. Also, it is, like you said, noteworthy that they didn't say he was an NXT wrestler. When's the last time he appeared on NXT? Like, how far back?
Ooh, it must have been a few months ago. I'd have to go check somebody else's data for that. But, it's been several months at this point. It's possible he has not even made a single appearance this calendar year. And
That's what I was thinking.
To be fair, speaking of Shotzi and Rick Boogs, those are two people who got drafted much higher than I was anticipating. I still think that Triple H just thinks so much more highly of Shotzi than she has proven being worth at this point. But are two that I also expected to go on the Peacock runoff.
Yes. Okay, well, let's pause. Let's introduce the show formally, and then we'll get to phone calls. We also have an on-site correspondent who is going to give us a call and let us know what it was like in the building for draft night and anything that happened off air. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Monday, May 1st, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder, editor, and publisher of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, 35 years and counting, and also pwtorch.com, which was launched in 1999. And I host various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast Flagship, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows following Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and a variety of VIP exclusive podcasts throughout the week, including the Wade Keller Hotlines following Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. When I wrap up these post shows, I give a start to finish rundown with analysis of everything that happened on all three major shows during the week, which I think is handy for people who don't have a chance to watch the shows, or they just want to hear me cover everything, even topics we don't cover here on the post show. So go VIP, and you can check out details on VIP membership at pwtorch.com/goVIP. We don't just tell you what's happening. We work hard to tell you why it's happening. That's been kind of a pitch and a specialty of our approach to covering wrestling, going back to when I was running full-page ads in Pro Wrestling Newsstand magazines in the early 90s when I was first expanding the business. It wasn't just the news, it's why certain things are happening in the news. So if you're intrigued by that aspect of pro wrestling, it's one of the main reasons to go VIP. We also try to stay ahead of the curve, and there's no curve we're more ahead on than rising stars, thanks to today's co-host, Tom Stout. Tom, welcome to the show. Tell people about your VIP exclusive shows.
Thank you. Yes, I don't go looking for them, but I also have never found another show that does exactly what Bonus Point on Torch VIP does, where I cover the untelevised portion of WWE's developmental. Granted, there is the preliminary Level Up show that is a major component of that, because that gives us glimpses of some of the people that they feel ready to put on TV in really as part of their training, so we can see where they're at. But even some of the people that are on the WWE Next in Line side of things, people who are signed in an exploratory manner, who are still attending college right now, I'm covering as much news as I can glean about them, and trying to predict who will and who will not end up signing WWE contracts. And I've got a pretty good track record so far with people like Tank Ledger and Obafemi recently debuting on NXT, and those are people who I predicted early on in their Next in Line runs that they would end up making it, just based on what they were showing. So I very much enjoy doing that. There's a new episode that just dropped yesterday, and hey, it's only 18 minutes long. So if you're at all curious about anything that I just mentioned, 18 minutes. Listen to it on 1.5 times speed and get through it even quicker, and you can get your monthly bonus point. Of course, also every Saturday with Kelly Wells, we are going back 8 years to the day and covering NXT. I've been covering NXT for the Torch since late 2017, and now we are flashing back even earlier than that. Right now, of course, 8 years back is 2015. We're currently covering the build to the takeover that would be the final NXT match between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens for that championship, as well as the takeover where Becky Lynch debuted her straight fire look. So fun stuff there, as always.
Excellent. You have been covering NXT for a long time for PW Torch, not just prospects and not just 8 years back, but you've attended a lot of shows. You've gotten to even know people, part of the NXT organization, and you just bump into them on the street. You have these brushes with fame at times.
That's true. Yeah, somebody got called up today, and I was like, oh, I just saw her in the grocery store.
Exactly. Yes. So it is so great timing that you had back issues and couldn't be with us prior to right now. And now you get to help us break down all the NXT call-ups and add some really good perspective to that. So we'll certainly get more into that as the show progresses. Like I said, we have an on-site correspondent we're expecting to hear from. The phone lines are filling up also. We are light on emails. It's hard to predict when we have lots of calls versus lots of emails versus lots of both. But you are, everybody listening live is welcome to call or email us if that is your preferred method of contributing to the show. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard, so we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Breaking news, we have Akira Tozawa drafted to Raw. So that's exciting. Piper Niven also drafted to Raw. Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo drafted to Raw. I think they already had announced Rick Boogs. I'm just looking at a graphic on Peacock. I'm freezing and rewinding, trying to host the show and also keep an eye on the latest news of who's getting drafted in the supplemental draft. So we don't have to leave people on hold for too long, even though I have a lot more questions for you about NXT and otherwise about tonight's show, because more happened than just the draft. This was the go-home show for Raw for Backlash, and we had angles with Cody and Lesnar and a Cody promo. We had the main event was Solo Sikoa and Seth Rollins with a run-in, run-ins to close out the show. The show was running a little long, so it got cut off rather hastily with Graves mid-sentence. And some other moments. So we'll get into all that as the show progresses in addition to the draft. But I appreciate everybody who is listening live, and of course those who downloaded the show later on and listening to us on delay on your phone app. But let's begin to take calls, and we will begin with area code 925. And then on deck will be Chris from Oklahoma after that. 925, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. 925 just dropped off, so Chris, you are actually going to be up first. 925, if you had a technical issue, feel free to call us back. All right, Chris, VIP priority caller, welcome. What's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
I was curious, with the draft, why did they have a draft pick for the tag team champions? Why would they have – the tag team champions are for both shows. SmackDown and Raw. Why did they have to use a
Chris, let me jump in and answer, because I totally understand your question. It's a common question, because they could lose the tag team titles. And when they do, they need to have a home brand. So when Sami and KO inevitably lose the belts, if it is in the next year before the next draft, we now know what show they will exclusively be on. So there's an easy answer to that one.
Okay. That was the first question I had. The second question I had is on NXT's call-ups, and this is directed at both you and your co-host. Why does it seem like certain people, like say Braun Breakfast, for example, that Vince McMahon, I know Vince McMahon, he called him up a few times to Raw. To me, he seems ready. What is holding him back, in your opinion, from
Tom,
a main roster spot?
Yeah, of course it's going to change from individual to individual, but in Braun Breakers, oh man, there's one. Okay, sorry, Chris, there's Indus Share just got drafted. I'm a fan. That's cool. I did not write them down. I thought about it and I was like, I'm not sure. I picked the Creeds, but since Indus Share went up, let's to Raw. Oh, hey, and Odyssey Jones, my goodness. Good for that guy. He's been in the PC for years. He has had a long journey heading to Raw. Good for him. Yeah, I wrote down the Creeds instead of Indus Share, but good for them. And we're getting a live look, a hug from Dante Chen from Odyssey Jones, I believe. I will get back to your question, Chris. I one of the things that's cool about this is that, except in the case of someone like a hey, there's Grayson Waller. This guy going to SmackDown, and importantly, not on the same show as The Miz. I was worried that he and The Miz would be redundant with one another. Grayson Waller is going to be a massive star. That is a shoe-in. And, yeah, I just think this live look at the PC is neat, because it does not seem like they have been given the tip off. I mean, Pretty Deadly got written off the show, so you know they've got a clue. But it does not seem like they knew that they were going to be getting the call up before the announcement happened. I mean, there's life planning that goes into that might have wrenches thrown in, but WWE kind of helps them out with that. I mean, they all live around the same area anyway, so I don't know for sure, but I've always suspected that WWE helps with housing and whatnot. Anyway, back to the question. Yes, it does. It's going to vary from individual to individual. In the case of someone like a Braun Breaker, who's been at the top of the card since he debuted on NXT, he's someone that you know they want to get a lot out of. So they don't want to – I mean, sure, they've botched this before, like with Bayley, for example. There's a major one, someone who had just massive potential from her first match on television at NXT, and her call-up was just inopportune. But with And I guess it's not a one-to-one comparison because Bayley started off very seasoned. She started off as a ring general that was basically a player coach. But Bron Breakker, for all the potential he has, it's there. We've not seen much growth on NXT. On one hand, with NXT being a nationally televised show now, there is a ratings aspect to that. Like right now on Peacock, we're looking at Grayson Waller getting a celebratory. He's guzzling a beer out of a shoe and doing a celebratory interview. He's someone that, although he was my personal top pick to get a call up in this draft, the only reason I second guessed it was because he's a big character on that show, and they need to be drawing viewers week to week to stay on the air. So there is that challenge where they're riding the line of being a brand and being a developmental product. With Bron Breakker, you're keeping one of your top names that is still involved with the top program. He's still feuding with the man who won the NXT championship from him. So that's still a program. They also recently, I mean, obviously you know this, I'm not breaking news, but they turning him heel is not just a storyline thing that they're doing. They're seeing what they've got with Bron Breakker as a heel. And a lot of people, Booker T has recently spoken on this because he's got a front row seat to every single show. And he podcasts very frequently. And I agree with Booker T when he says that Bron Breakker seems much more like a natural heel. And when he turned heel, you just start to think, okay, here we go. Now we're really going to see what we have with this guy, because although he got over with the Orlando crowd to an extent that I personally didn't expect, I he wasn't going to get outright rejected. That's not necessarily something that this crowd really does, MSK being an exception. But and now, of course, they've embraced Wes Lee as a singles act. But Bron did become more popular than I expected as a babyface, but it just never felt all that natural. His promos were extremely one-dimensional, and the ring work just never really seemed to grow too much beyond what was already a pretty good starting point once we finally got to start seeing him on TV. So while we went from a point last year around this time saying, like, hey, maybe SummerSlam, hey, maybe he's the one who beats Roman for the championship, I'm personally now at a point where I think it's wise to keep him on NXT and let him continue to cook, let him try out his chops as a heel on national television with a smaller audience on Tuesday nights, and we'll see what we get. I think it's going to be a more promising prospect within a year from now when they're looking at him more seriously as call-up potential.
I think, too, they just – when Bron comes in, and I think you alluded to this or more so than that, Tom, is it's the timing has to be right with Bron. He is a top priority. Not that Grayson Waller isn't, but Grayson's going to integrate and get himself over no matter who he gets dropped into a feud with. It's not like the timing has to be perfect. With Bron, they want his appearance to be a big deal. And so, for instance, he might come in and attack Cody on right as Cody's given a major speech about wanting a title shot. And Bron attacks him and diverts Cody from challenging Reigns because the attack is or the Raw champ, whatever the storyline is at that moment and the timing of it. It doesn't have to be specifically that, but my point is he's going to make a big splash, and they're not going to draft him just because it's time for the draft. They're going to call him up when they're ready for him to make that big splash. Doesn't mean he'll get over it. Doesn't mean he deserves that treatment. I'm not judging on that. I have my opinion on that, but he is special and sort of above the draft. I would not assume it's going to take another year. Would you, Tom, before we see him on the main roster?
This time last year I was saying the same thing. When I was speaking a moment ago,
so.
I thought about it for a moment and I decided to phrase it as within the year. So
yeah,
I'll stick to that because before 2023 ends.
There we go. Yep. All right. Yeah. Very good.
Hold me to it.
Yep. That works. Chris, any follow up on anything we just said, or do you want to bring up a different topic?
One more topic and then I'll be done. What about Johnny Gargano, is he still injured? Does anyone know when he's supposed to come back?
He was drafted tonight. So he was in the supplemental draft, and he is property of Raw. And yeah, he had some injury, but have you seen him in results wrestling? I'm trying to recall if he was on the house show that we got a report from overseas this weekend or not. Tom, does it jump out to you?
I personally haven't heard anything or seen anything.
Yeah.
I was expecting him to go, you know, it's one of the ones that I wrote down optimistically, not super optimistically. I expected him to go toward the end of the show, but I going into this and looking at, okay, with the roster shakeups, even if they aren't super dynamic, it's just freshening things up for the new season. There are people who can be put in positions to be reconsidered. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to use the word freshened again, but, you know, a fresh look. You can bring someone like Johnny Gargano out and basically give him a fresh look. Like, hey, remember when I walked out and said that it was my dream to become WWE champion and now that feels like a distant memory? Let's, you know, start down that path again, or at least set my sights on climbing the mountain that is Gunther, or something along those lines. Whether or not that's surmountable for him is a different story. So I was hoping that Gargano, and I guess the door isn't closed on this, but I was hoping that Gargano would be somebody that could get some more gas in his tank post draft. But I'm not sure what his health status is, and it's not super surprising to see him put on the supplemental draft as opposed to the main television show. Dexter Lumis, since those two have been linked, that was also, and Candice LeRae, I think those were all, yes, those were all supplementals from, I think they did it on Saturday or Friday night, whenever it was. I've got them marked down as none of them went on the main television show. The only associated act there, since Austin Theory is not associated with them anymore, that went on the main show is Indy Hartwell.
I am with the Grayson Waller news, and Chris, hold on, we'll throw back to you in a second if you got anything more. But I'm like, you know, I mentioned Cameron Grimes going late, you know, as the last pick and to sort of find him down. Are you concerned at all that Grayson Waller didn't get kind of the attention on the main show? Like Grayson on the promo in the background here, I've got closed captioning on, just said, I'm surprised it took this long for me to be drafted. And then he looked at the crowd who are, you know, the NXT guys and gals who were behind him cheering. He's like, they didn't get me here. I got myself here. And he's, you know, talking himself up and he's drinking out of a shoe. He's just like animated and just looks ready, you know, ready to make an impact. Why not have that be in front of, you know, millions of people on Raw instead of on, you know, in front of, you know, tens of thousands on Raw Talk?
Yeah. I mean, as with anything, I would have a much clearer answer after we see how he's integrated. I almost want to say that if they do run with him as a heel character, which only seems logical to me, I would look at this guy. He came into NXT as a babyface, and it was okay-ish. Less on the character side of things, and then once the bell rang, you were like, oh, all right, there's something there. And then he switched heel, and it was just, you know, we're off to the races now. So I want to say that he works well with a chip on his shoulder, and maybe he can use this in a storyline sense. But if it were up to me, yes, I would have put him in round 3 or at least 4 just to signal to the crowd, like, hey, this is somebody you're going to want to watch.
Yeah, yep. All right, Chris, I'll throw back to you for any concluding words.
Well, just one last thing, and I think the reasoning they made it is because in the past, they have not got good receptions coming from the NXT to Raw or SmackDown. It's been a rare exception for them to get over with the crowds. And I think that could be possibly part of it. And with that, I'm done.
Tom, any thoughts?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to the Bayley thing. And another one I like to bring up a lot is Tyler Breeze, just people who showed just worlds of potential. And for as forgiving as I have historically been of Vince McMahon's booking, you know, the rigmarole I always go through is just like, well, he is historically the most successful promoter of all time. you look at misses like that and you just wonder, why didn't he see it? Why didn't he put together a better plan for promising acts like that? But, you know, we're in, you know, obviously Vince is still around now, but or he's back again, rather, to a certain extent. But the people who are there day in and day out and present on the developmental side and on the main roster side are Shawn Michaels and Triple H, Paul Levesque. So I'm going to say we are going to see a different approach to these. And no, it's not going to be across the board. You know, I have my questions about how someone like Cameron Grimes is going to be handled. But then we also look at someone, I mean, even Indy Hartwell, she's got an upward climb to prove herself as someone who should be thought of on the upper side of the power rankings, as opposed to someone who just shows up every once in a while to take a loss. And that, I say that as an Indy Hartwell fan. But even, you know, somebody like J.D. McDonagh, loads of talent, but, you know, he may find himself slotted lower on the card, and you need people like that. I mean, when was the last time we saw Humberto Carrillo and Angel Garza on television? But they're serving a purpose. I'm guessing that they show up on – well, I was going to say I'm guessing they show up on Main Event from time to time, but I didn't tonight, but I usually pay attention to those results, and I haven't seen those names in a long time. So, but, you know, you need people up and down the card. So, again, not all these people are going to be world champions, but I'm more optimistic now because – Triple H is holding most of the reins at this point as far as what we are seeing on the end result of the television product. And he's the guy who for years now has been involved in signing all of these people. And up and down, yeah, there's no one new enough. I mean, Triple H is still directly involved in the signings of everybody who puts ink to paper after the tryouts or in between when there are special cases, like off the top of my head, I think Gabby Butler was someone who signed outside of the regular tryout cycle that they've established now. But there's nobody here on the list who is new enough that Paul Levesque was not directly involved in their time in NXT in one way or another.
All right, very good. Chris, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Yep, as always. All right, our number, if you're just joining us, especially if you just concluded watching Raw Talk to see the supplemental draft, you can give us a call and participate in the discussion, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We'll now go to Brad from Florida. You are up next. Brad, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
Hey, thank you, Wade. And Kelly, I just want to tell you, man, you made my night while I was on hold hearing that Grayson. You're like, there he is, Grayson Waller. I have to be honest with you. I was calling up legitimately angry that Grayson Waller was not and like you guys, and Wade just brought up the point, why would you not have a guy who's this dynamic picked just in front of millions of people on the actual show instead of on Raw Talk? But I hope maybe it does lead to an angle or something. I just, you know, to Chris's point that he just said, you know, well, you know, these NXT people have a hard time getting over. Like, did anyone care when Austin Theory was called up? Like, did anyone care when LA Knight showed up on the main roster? Did anyone care? Even Gunther, you know, I was hearing, oh, just another big guy, another big brute. You know, he's not going to – I mean, this guy is a top act now. So, you know, with these NXT people, it's really what they make it and how their personality and their act gets them over. And I really believe that Grayson Waller will be one of the biggest stars in WWE. And I almost view it as a can't miss. Like, that's how confident I am, especially if they, you know, do leave him as a heel. But I just am so excited about this, that the fact that he was picked, I'm upset that he was picked on Raw Talk, but other than that, guys, I mean, really, you just made my night. I mean, legitimately by hearing that, made my night.
His reaction when he got drafted, just standing up and just, I mean, it's like there is an energy and a charisma and an alpha quality to him that might be undeniable, Tom. And by the way, it's Tom, not Kelly. I get them mixed up too all the time.
Oh, Tom, my bad. I'm so sorry. I am so, so sorry. Tom, please forgive me, man. And Tom, I've spoken to you many times, and I don't know why I said Kelly. It's probably just my excitement. My bad.
You're perfectly fine, man. 98% of the time when I'm on a Torch podcast, Kelly's the other voice, so you're good.
Yeah. I've knocked on Kelly's door looking for Tom before, so, you know, like, is Tom here? And he's like, no, wait, this is Kelly. How many times do I have to tell you? I'm your neighbor.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Tom, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed.
No, that's all right. I was just joking around about Tom and Kelly, but I actually want to get a little bit more from Tom, and just in terms of what Brad had to say about Grayson. Anything more you want to add on that?
Oh, it is so rare that Brad and I disagree on anything. I'm almost more curious if there's anyone else, and since Brad is also in the area and sometimes attends NXT shows, if there's anything else that stands out to him from the people who got picked or maybe the people who didn't. But yeah, I agree. It's we don't say it lightly when we say that Grayson Waller is a shoe-in to be a big star. I mean, there is an elite echelon that brings somebody to be a WrestleMania main eventer, so I'm not trying to be ridiculous and vaunt him up to that standard already, but I view him as a big time player for at least a handful of years here, and hopefully more than that if things work out for him. It's he and Tiffany Stratton on NXT are the two that I look at, and I'm just like, I mean, with Stratton for the women's division, it's easier to say, like, okay, her ceiling is WrestleMania main event. And I mean, I just compared Grayson Waller to The Miz earlier, and he's a WrestleMania main eventer. So we shall see. But yes, with both of those two names, the sky is the limit. I'm thrilled. Honestly, I'm not even, it's not ideal, but I'm not even that upset about the Raw Talk call up. You know, we'll see him burst onto the scene on March 8th, as Triple H put it, on May 8th, and hopefully he hits the ground running.
Yeah, man.
Brad, back to you.
Yeah, not that this is the NXT talk show, but I agree with you on Tiffany, too. I think she has a Charlotte Flair ceiling, and that's no exaggeration. Yeah. And the thing with Grayson that I think you'll love, Wade, as you continue to watch him more, I know you're not a huge NXT guy, but I know you're obviously familiar. The thing about Grayson is that, yes, he has the personality sort of like a Miz in a way, like in terms of being very charismatic and loud and dynamic, but he also is much more athletic than the Miz. Like he does really athletic moves.
Yeah.
And his, like, you know, just his presence, and he makes you care about what he does. He has an unbelievable entrance. Like, it just feels like stardom is there. And it's something I'm really excited about. And I hope, you know, everyone who listens can really, you know, when he gets to SmackDown, can see that. I would imagine he'll be doing things with Theory and LA Knight, and I don't know. Just SmackDown does seem, though, after this draft, very heel heavy. Like, I don't even know who Theory will have as a challenger. Potentially, maybe Cameron Grimes. I don't even know. But regardless of all of that, I was very excited to see Katana and Kayden get called up, because they're a legitimate women's tag team. Like, they're best friends, they're always together. Like, they come across as, like, this is a real tag team, not Liv Morgan and Raquel. This is a real tag team. And I was very, very happy to see them get called up too. But, you know, in the same respect, in that last round when I didn't hear Grayson's name and I heard them, I was like, oh, it's great. But, like, oh man, you know, like, I just kind of felt that way. But again, just really excited. And I was about to, you know, literally call just angry, just being like, you know, this was handled very poorly, yeah. And I'm very disappointed, but this turned out to me fantastic in terms of the new talent, because I think that's what this draft is all about, right? Bringing in people that are going to enhance the roster and make things different, not just moving one guy to this brand and one guy to that brand and, yeah, it shakes up the matchups, but I think the addition is what makes it exciting from the NXT people.
Very good. Anything you want to add to that, Tom?
I'll just double down on Kaden and Katana. Any longtime listeners of the NXT Daily Cast might remember that week after week, I would say that Casey Catanzaro, Katana Chance, was my favorite thing to track on the show because she always had a lot of potential, but and you could tell that they were really protecting her a lot, that you, her matches were move-to-move choreographed. They were always the same sequences for the same amount of time each time, always against the same opponents. It was then Reyna Gonzalez, now Raquel Rodriguez, and Rhea Ripley that she was always paired with, and they always did the same exact routines. And it was just so rewarding to see her grow over the years, but it did not fully click until she and Caden Carter became real-life friends and then became a tag team on television. I'm house shows first, if I remember correctly. That just seems to make logical sense, but clearly working together closely at the Performance Center, and Brad is absolutely right. They are an actual women's tag team, not like Raquel and Liv being thrown together because TV needed somebody, not like Sonya and Chelsea being thrown together because TV needed somebody. And they don't even mention that the two of them actually go back to the final season of Tough Enough together. They were on that season together, but unless they have mentioned it and I missed it, but Caden and Katana. I mean, here's another thing that'll happen before 2023 is out. They'll be women's tag team champions. I know that those belts get bumped around a lot, but after Grayson Waller, those two were next down on my list. Like, okay, they've got to get called up for this draft, right? If not now, when? It's perfect, and I'm excited to see them on the bigger stage.
All right, very good. Brett, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, the crowd won't know to do the whoop, whoop when they do their entrance, but maybe we can get that going for those two girls because it'll be phenomenal to see that. The last thing is just, I mean, on the actual show, I hated the ending. It feels like that's like the ending so many, the interference. I just hated that. But it was interesting to see Dominic. Is he the number one heel behind Roman Reigns or number two heel behind Roman Reigns in wrestling? I mean, have you ever heard?
I mean, for heel, he that, yeah.
I mean, that was insane. I mean that reaction that he got. I mean, there's people that would die for that. Like that. That's the dream when you become a heel wrestler. Like that's the dream reaction that you want. And it's actually incredible to see. I'm very happy for him. I think a lot of people in that locker room are probably very envious of what he's able to draw.
Yeah,
because,
I was going to say that. Yeah.
You know, really fascinating. I mean, that was raucous. I would describe it as raucous. That's like, someone getting ejected in a game 7 of an NBA playoff game where the home crowd
totally,
is just
yep,
going
yep.
berserk, like that level of crazy. And, I'm trying to think of like what else, like, you know, I guess that's really it. Like what I took away from the show. I mean, I did think it was interesting that Heyman was talking about the belt, the new belt and how great it would look on Roman Reigns. Cause that was kind of like my prediction, like that Roman would actually somehow end up weaseling his way into going after and winning that belt, or Heyman would weasel his way in for Roman. But regardless, I really did think it was a great, a very enjoyable and an easy watch tonight, that this show. But again, the draft was just, I mean, it just had me all hyper and especially about Grayson Waller. And my last thing is, I promise this will be my last thing. I know a lot of people like default to say, well, Bron Breakker is the guy they got to call up, right? Bron Breakker. I mean, Bron Breakker's, like, younger. Like, Tom, how old is Bron Breakker? Is he – I mean, I'm sure I could Google this in 2 seconds, but is he 25? What is he?
Yeah.
26?
He's 25.
I'm also – okay, there
he's
we
25.
Go. Yeah, I was – we're all hitting the Google machine.
Yeah, so he's, like, 25. I think, you know, because he's in this very serious relationship with Cora Jade, I would imagine that he probably could have been called up. And I really think he probably just wanted to stay down there, be with his girlfriend. I really think that. I really think there's definitely a possibility to that. And speaking of girlfriends, the one thing I was thinking about, too, was Ricochet getting drafted to Raw while his, I guess, fiance or wife is the announcer on SmackDown. It's weird because they normally don't like to separate people. Like, you know, when you saw Becky was drafted to Raw, you knew Seth was going to Raw. When you saw that even, you know, Raquel was going to SmackDown. Did Raquel go to SmackDown? I'm sorry.
Raquel is...
No, she's on Raw.
On Raw.
But they can bounce.
Okay, so she went to Raw. So she's with Braun Strowman, who went to Raw also.
Yeah.
So I guess Ricochet is the only one who got separated from their significant other in this draft. But the ring announcer, Samantha Irvin. But I don't know, guys. It was a good show. And, again, I'm just all hyped up about
cool.
Grayson Waller, man. That's all I
yeah.
care about, honestly. Have a good night, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
Tom.
Brad.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, my friend Tom. All right. Thanks. Thanks.
Yeah, always always a pleasure, Brad, truly.
Thanks, Wade. Bye.
All right. You bet. Thanks, Brad. Yeah, Grayson Waller, 33. You know, it's like it's time to get to
yeah.
it. You know,
yeah.
you got 8 years for Braun Strowman to hang around NXT. For Grayson
yeah.
is ready. Okay,
I will throw out there real quick, yeah. Kelly Kincaid and whichever one of the Pretty Deadlies she's with, I've never quite memorized their noon after they – switched stateside. I never quite memorized their new names, but that is a relationship that also got broken up. But we're also assuming that Samantha Irvin is going to stay. I mean, she's very good at saying her Roman Reigns, but, you know, maybe she'll move over to Raw, because although I'm not sure the relationship with Cora Jade, and they did explicitly advertise Cora Jade as being part of the new NXT, meaning that anybody who had her on their lists, that basically eliminated her from consideration at that point. She also does need more seasoning, although she's toward the top of the list of consideration when we start to think of a next round of call-ups, whenever that may happen. But I'm not sure that for as seriously as the company has for several years now been taking relationships to the point where, as we saw again tonight, Triple H even likes to format shows so couples can see one another backstage between matches. Like Raquel Gonzalez goes, or Raquel Rodriguez goes backstage while Braun Strowman is getting ready to come out for his match. You see that all the time on Triple H formatted shows. I'm not sure that would prevent a call-up, or if they would take very kindly to someone saying, no, thanks, I don't
right.
want to go on Raw or SmackDown
yeah.
right now because my girlfriend's in Orlando. But yes, in most other cases, that does seem to be something that they have stuck to quite considerately for their talent.
All right, let's now go to our on-site correspondent who attended tonight. Seigen, can you help me pronounce your name?
Seigen.
Seigen, that was going to be my first guest, and then I second-guessed myself.
Seigen,
thank you. Cool. Thanks for taking time to talk to us after attending tonight. First, I guess I'll ask, what was it like being there for a draft episode? Did it enhance it because it felt so newsworthy and you got to see some old names, or did it take away from the flow of the show from a live event experience? Start with your take on that.
It definitely affected the flow of the show, but it helped that they had legends because the crowd was excited to see the legends come out. Still, though, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of wrestling on a show like this, and if you're a wrestling fan, you know, kind of missing out on that. But we had a lot of fun. It was my wife's first live event, and I was excited to hopefully get some good reactions tonight. And Dominic Mysterio got a crazy, crazy reaction. That was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And Seth Rollins was over too, so it was pretty cool. We had a good time.
Yeah. So let's start with the reaction to Dominic. And I mean, it just seems like the crowd is just almost people are buying tickets just to be part of booing Dominic at this point. I asked this knowing the answer, but did anything else come close, or what came closest in terms of just heel heat for someone?
I had it in my order for heels for the night. Dominic was by far and away number one. I mean, it wasn't even close. But second to him, in my opinion, was Paul Heyman, actually. When he first came out, the fans really were booing him pretty heavy when he first came out. And then I had Brock Lesnar as last for, like, his interaction with Cody. I think more for him not fighting than anything else. But, he did good with the cowboy line, and that got people fired up. So, but nobody was close to Dominic, really. But Paul Heyman, I say, would be second.
And so from a babyface perspective, it sounds like you got your list ready. Elaborate on who got the biggest pops. Where did Cody rank, for instance, compared to Seth, et cetera?
So Cody was the most over, but we didn't get to see him enough to get the full reaction. Like, on TV, you only got a little bit of it because right after, he beat up the security guards and he got a major reaction. But I don't think TV got to see that, unfortunately. We did it live, but he was number one. Seth was number two, and it was close because people love doing Seth's song. And he just had us doing it all night, even after the show went off the air. That was the promo. He just introduced all the baby faces and then had us sing, and that was it. It was those two, and then Rey Mysterio and, like, the whole LWO as a whole were number three, because Ray, when he came out, they got a major reaction, and they kept the crowd to do the LWO throughout the match, and they were really hyped for doing the chant with him, so they were pretty good too. But I would say Cody one, Seth two, LWO number three.
Very good. Tom, jump in with a question.
Of course, the most important question that you'll be asked tonight, are you as disappointed as I was that we did not get to see Michael Hayes this week?
I've never seen him in person, so I actually was kind of looking forward to it, but, you just never know who's going to be there, right?
That's true. So on the subject of Seth, I don't know how you would even gather this sense, but do you have a sense for, I mean, the number of times throughout the night that Seth was present in some form in the building and people were singing for him, that people just like singing the song the same way they like going whoa for Cody or the da-da-da for Shinsuke, or is it Seth himself? Do things kind of temper down once the bell rings? Is it just the crowd interaction, or is it Seth freaking Rollins that people really want to see?
I think that it's a little bit of both, if that's a fair answer. They like him because he's a great wrestler as well. Like, and especially tonight was tough because in the match with Solo, he got us to sing like four or five different times. He's like playing mind games with him. So like it's this was a hard night to tell the difference because he kept getting us to do it over and over again. But I think people really enjoy seeing him because when they weren't singing, like when we finally stopped doing that in the main event, people got hot for him again as he was making his comeback against Solo. And in my opinion, honestly, he should be the first champion. I think that would be the right move to make him the inaugural World Heavyweight Champion. I think he's in the right position to do it.
Yeah, it in many ways it feels like his to lose. There is part of me that wonders if how much do they want to keep Drew McIntyre? How much do they want to keep Drew McIntyre? But
Or how much did they pay and now they feel obligated? If they did sign him to a pricey extension, do they now want to get their money's worth out of him, or do they resent the negotiations and want to bury him and make him pay? There's all kinds of ways you can look at what's going on.
Right. I can at least say that everyone I was considering as a possible first holder of that championship or possible contender over the next year for it. They're on the correct brand, or they're a free agent. So there was another element that was not particularly surprising about the draft. But you know, I looked up what the results were, and there's no NXT representation. But forgive me if you already indicated when you arrived and whether it precludes this. But did you catch main event, and do you have any thoughts on what you saw or did not see there?
So we got there as Piper Niven won her match. So I can't even say who she went against. We just heard that she had won as we walked in. We went to the bathroom, got into the arena, and saw Mustafa Ali against, which I don't know if that's still his name now, but anyway, we saw Ali against Akira Tozawa. And that actually was a pretty fun match. Tozawa was doing really good. And Ali won and got actually pretty decent heat in the match. I mean, they're really good. It's just I don't know if they'll have a real spot on the show ever. But it was fun to watch them in that
match.
I didn't get to see Piper Niven. I think that was the only two matches, though, that they did for main event.
Yeah, according to what I'm seeing, that is correct. Piper Niven defeated Dana Brooke, who, come to think of it, may have been the blonde that I think I saw being drafted to Raw on Raw Talk. And, yeah, it's funny that you say, I don't know if Mustafa Ali is still his name. It is, but I also think that every time I think of him. I'm like, he's got to have a new name. Or, like, he's going by an online screen name now, right, for his new character. I keep on having that same thought. But no, it's still Mustafa. I'll correct myself. Mustafa.
Mustafa, yes. Thank you for correcting us.
I will point people towards pwtorch.com. I wrote a Keller's Take editorial earlier today looking at the top candidates to win the World Heavyweight title in the tournament at Night of Champions. So you can kind of see my analysis of the pros and cons and why some people may or may not should or shouldn't be in your list of high consideration to win, and why management might go a direction or not go a direction with some of them. We also put up a poll last night about who readers want of pwtorch.com to be the first world champion. Seth Rollins way ahead, 40% of the vote. The next best vote getter is Cody with 15%. Drew McIntyre right there with 14%. Gunther at 10. Shinsuke Nakamura coming in at, was 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth spot with 9%. And then Brock Lesnar, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Austin Theory, others in the poll. So you can read my take on that at pwtorch.com. Lots of great content there every day. Please check it out every day. Check out our website. But that in particular, we won't expand on that here on this show, since that could be a very long conversation. But I just wanted to throw that out there. I want to know, Sagan, if you can rank the crowd reaction. I'm just kind of curious what the crowd reactions were for the special guests, Eric Bischoff, JBL, Shawn Michaels. How did Shawn Michaels pop compare to, say, Triple H's? What was the crowd reaction to Bischoff? Teddy Long, that kind of thing. What stood out to you there?
So Triple H, you know, he kind of gave himself the best spot, right, coming out at the beginning. And he definitely was one out of the legends. I would say it was probably RVD second, actually, because his name the whole time he was saying the names, and then probably Road Dogg third, and Shawn Michaels was like right there with him, but Shawn Michaels kind of got his pop stolen by Cody and Brock. Like, we were starting to react to Sean, and then we got the interaction with them too, so we kind of got our focus taken away from his. So I would say definitely the biggest one was Triple H, and then it just kind of went down from there.
Yep, that makes sense. You know what? Let me ask this: Omos, was he over, or were people just like, "Come on, why is this guy still winning squash matches?"
You know, the funny thing about it, my wife saw him and she was like, oh my God, this guy is freaking huge. And I was laughing about that, but I can't lie. He got no reaction, like no negative, positive, nothing. It was like crickets in there the whole time. And the only reaction actually was when the guy punched him in the mouth. and he like stood there for a second, and everybody was like, "What? The jobber got a hit? I can't believe it!" And he got one more punch, and then it was, you know, it was over, and nobody reacted when he walked out either. I was actually pretty surprised. I figured people would at least react just to how big he was, because he is gigantic. Seeing him in person for the first time, I was like, "Wow, this is no boy. This is a man right here." It was crazy. But yeah, he didn't get a reaction really at all.
Based on his good showing in our online poll, speaking of Shinsuke Nakamura getting nearly as many votes as some other pretty big names like Gunther and not too far off from Drew McIntyre, did the crowd response tonight, would that make, if you're WWE management, are you thinking, hey, there's something here. Maybe we, whatever we're thinking with him, maybe we should move it up a notch or not? What's your take from the crowd reaction, not just for his ring entrance, but also his interactions with Miz? Obviously, they were into the tiny ball thing, and, you know, that you can enjoy that or roll your eyes at it, but what can you extract from it otherwise?
So what I would say, based off tonight's reaction, Shinsuke could challenge for the Intercontinental title now. Like, he's over enough. The crowd was with him.
Yep.
He could go fight Gunther right now, or Gunther right now, and I think that would be a good place for him. He got a good reaction. If you go my list he before, so I mean it was pretty good. Especially like the tiny ball thing, the crowd ate that up. And putting him with the Miz is just putting anybody with the Miz is just a good call. They're gonna get a good reaction, but I think it works for him. You know, timing him just coming back, and then putting him with Miz to start was a good call.
Is there anything else, Tom, you want to ask?
No, actually, Omos and Shinsuke were the other two on my list, so I'm covered.
I was thinking, anything else that is in your notes or on your mind that you want to bring up about the experience tonight, including, for instance, merchandise that you saw a lot of or crowd size or anything else?
So it looked like the crowd was maybe like 80%, so pretty good. There were spots open at the top, and then on the camera, like the side they're facing when they do all the promos and stuff, that side had some empty spots, but our side, we're on the other side. So the back view of the wrestlers, it was full on that side. So that was good to see. The women's match was completely dead, and I feel bad for them because they're trying, but it wasn't working. During the breaks, they had a John Cena fan cam, like doing the You Can't See Me thing, and then they had a DX one too, just to give us something to do during the breaks. Let's see. Oh, Rhea was over big as a baby, actually. She got a great positive reaction, and it was really weird because Dominic got this major negative one, but she got such a big positive one right before it. So that was interesting. Damian Priest got loud what chance during his promo because he started off really quiet, so nobody actually could hear him at first. And then he switched to the accent, and then we were just like, everybody was just saying what the whole time. And then the only other thing, let's see. In terms of shirts, it was definitely, we saw a lot of John Cena shirts, a lot of Cody Rhodes shirts. And a lot of LWO shirts. I would say Cody and John Cena were close, and John Cena probably had the slight edge on shirts. And then LWO was right behind both of them in terms of, the most shirts I saw in the crowd. And then lastly, there was no go-home or dark match. Seth, the heels all came back into the ring. They beat him up. KO did a stunner on, I think, Jimmy. And then they did the stomp to Jay. And then they rolled out, and then Seth just had each guy bow. He introduced everybody, and then we sang our way out of the building. So no dark match, but it was fun singing on our way out.
When you mentioned Damian Priest, this is neither here nor there, but a fan held up a sign that said, Priest skips leg day. And I thought that was pretty harsh if you're walking out there and you got to stare at that as a wrestler being held up. Cool. Well, Segan, thank you so much. Appreciate your time and calling in, and you did a great job conveying what it's like. Any additional thoughts on how your wife reacted to everything?
Oh, I asked her if she had a great time, and she said she really did. She liked it a lot. It was fun getting those reactions. And the last thing, if you don't mind, if I just can leave you with a question. Do you guys think that it would, like, if Cody does end up being the champion, do you view that championship as a consolation prize, or do you view it as a consolation prize already because nobody can beat Roman the way they're set it up? Like, Roman's the champion, and whoever wins this is lesser than. Am I right? I guess that's my last question. Thank you guys for having me, and again, when they're back in Texas, I can be on.
Yeah, and as I say to everybody too, if you're welcome to call us on a week you're not in person too, if you've got questions or comments on Raw too, if it works out for your schedule. Thank you so much. We'll address. Yeah, for sure. Consider yourself invited. Tom, what do you think of the consolation prize question regarding Cody?
Yeah, I already view the belt as a consolation prize, especially because they have not bothered to associate it with any history. I hope that at the pay-per-view, we get at least a video package saying that, okay, officially, this is the old big gold WCW World Heavyweight Championship or something to try to give it some meaning, because it really does just feel like, we came up with something new to fight for. It was the Intercontinental title and the U.S. title for a while there, but, Seth seems restless, so here's a thing. Here's a MacGuffin for a reason to make people clash on our weekly TV shows and sell Peacock accounts. So it becomes especially egregious if Cody wins it after he quadrupled down tonight on the finishing the story angle on what his goals are right now. He's still on that. It wasn't just a WrestleMania catchphrase for him. And again, it was a Sammy thing, and they cleverly transitioned that over to Cody. I thought that was clever, but Cody's still riding that. And it's Roman. If it's not Roman, which, I mean, I think it's going to be Roman for the foreseeable future, it's that particular championship that Cody has already looked at and repeatedly associated with his father and why he wants to win that one. So I'm now left hoping that Brock, like, win or lose, that Cody is so worn out from the Brock match in Puerto Rico that he doesn't show up again until after Night of Champions and he can't be in the tournament, that there's some sort of cheap, like, we thought that Brock was done with him, but he took a private jet to Saudi Arabia to screw Cody out of winning in the second or third round, because you don't want the presumable, I say presumable babyface, the people that I'm considering are currently babyfaces, could be a heel, usually a good move to go with a heel as the first champion, in my personal opinion. If I was booking a territory, I feel like I would want to do that, but you don't want the likely winner of Seth Rollins or even Drew McIntyre winning because their opponent got screwed.
Yeah, and my short answer, and again, I'll point everyone to my article on pwtorch.com because I covered that and so many more aspects of this tournament for the title and who to look for to win. But it is a consolation prize, and that's why I don't think Cody will win. I think it'll be there's a real headwind for it to not feel like a consolation prize. Now, I will do my, and I often do this, you know, the asterisk, you got to wait and see what they have in mind before you fully dig your heels in. If Cody wins, I'll think that was likely a bad move, and for all the reasons that you guys have brought up. But maybe there's some plan where it really ends up making sense because you can make the title feel valuable, establish him as a top guy, defending against everybody, but he says, while making the title feel important and defending it with honor and excitement and pride and charisma, he also says, I will not feel fully at peace until I beat Roman Reigns. And, you know, you could plant that seed and go with it. I don't think they're teasing us with a false signal that Seth's going to win. I think Seth is going to win. It just makes too much sense. Sometimes you just go with what makes sense. You don't try to be too clever. And I just don't think there's anyone else that jumps out. I would say Drew McIntyre maybe going heel would be the next route. And so I'd say maybe Drew against Cody seems like a face-to-face matchup in the tournament. But then Drew goes, you know, turns heel on Cody and then ends up facing Seth. And then, you know, that can be a pick-em at that point in the final. So maybe a storyline like that would help get Cody out of the realm. And then if Seth wins, that would sidetrack Cody in a feud with Drew. And it would give Cody something important to do while Seth then goes on to defend. I mean, there's a lot of directions this can go, but it's not ideal if Cody wins a title that looks like it's created as a consolation prize for him. I mean, it just nobody wants to come short of winning the Stanley Cup, and then there's some, like, you know, Burt's Cup that they win from, you know, a guy named Burt. You know, I mean, so let's keep our eye on the real prize here.
I like the Drew idea. That sounds very good to me, especially because he does need something to heat him back up again. If it's just same old babyface Drew that wins this belt, it's the man is not making the belt in that regard. But that might the opposite might be the case if he goes heel like that. I like that example. But if you are Seth Rollins and you win this championship, you're smart enough to kind of resent it, right? I mean, again, like you said, asterisk, we'll see where they're going. I loved Brad's theory of Roman just winning it all anyway, even though Paul very distinctly said that that's not an option. But if you're Seth, you do kind of look at this like, really, this is what they had for me. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Seth beat Reigns by DQ the last time they wrestled, and he's been wanting a shot, and other people have gotten in the way, storyline-wise, and I think real life, he sees himself as an alpha, as someone who's really over, and, you know, again, I explained it in my editorial, I think Seth is a good, safe pick, with some reservations about it just being a made-up title, but if you're trying to make the best of the situation, I just think fans will look at Seth and go, yeah, you know, he deserves it, and we see him as a champion we can be proud of because he's over, he's got great music, he's got a good look, he's found a gimmick that click, but he's was seen as Roman's equal in the Shield, you know, for the most part, you know, depending on, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder, but they weren't a big there wasn't a big difference between them in terms of, I think, how fans perceive them, and he's going to have great matches. And one of the things I wrote about is the key is, can you headline a pay-per-view that Roman is also on, and can the champion of Raw go on last without it feeling like a huge letdown? And that's the test that anybody who wins a title has to pass. And I think Seth can. So I don't want to give away too much of the article. I want people to go click on it. But that is one of the key points. Segan, thanks again. All right. We'll continue to take calls here. You can continue to call if you're joining us midstream or just want to jump in with your opinion on things we've been talking about. 347-215-8558 when you call push 1. We've got somebody from Pittsburgh, and then we got Jay in Hartford, and we got Kyle in Baltimore all lined up here. We'll start with Pittsburgh caller. Go ahead, state your name and confirm the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, it's JD in Pittsburgh. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for calling. Well, what's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Well, I'm going to say this draft absolutely sucked, and I'll tell you why. Do we need a poor man's team like the Beverly Brothers 2.0 in Pretty Deadly there? I mean, you didn't bring up freaking Cameron, you didn't bring up Bron Breakker. You shit on him, literally, however. And you could have brought up Wes Lee and some other people tonight. Zoe Stark, Cora Jade. You crapped all over them. I mean, this show was absolutely a mess tonight. It was absolutely fake as can be. And this whole draft was fake as can be, if you ask me. It was ridiculous. I mean, yeah, okay, we got the Bloodline over on SmackDown, but we don't need the suck-ass Judgment Day on Raw, okay? We don't need Rhea the Twat Ripley and Dum Dum and Finn and Damian Priest boring us the fucking tears with Corey Graves kissing their ass every week.
All right, well, JD, we gotta mark for edit here. That's obviously not the tone of our show. So we will edit that out of the final version and move on. That's unfortunate. We'll go to Jay in Hartford next. Jay, thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Hey, good evening, Wade. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, sure can.
Hey, good evening to you and the co-host. I'm sorry, I just joined in, so I'm not sure who's on with you tonight, but thank you for taking my call.
Tom Stout. Tom Stout, we've been talking a lot of NXT, so if you got NXT topic, that's good, but if not, we certainly covered a lot of it.
I don't, but good evening to Todd as well. Tom, sorry. Good evening, Tom. How you doing?
Or Kelly.
Yeah, oh, no, I'm very familiar with
him. You know, with a monosyllabic Anglo name, and with a last name that's difficult to pronounce, I've learned that as long as I can tell the person's referring to me, I'm happy.
There you go. All right, Tom. So here we go. So I just joined in, and you guys were talking about Seth, which is one of the things I wanted to, or one of the individuals I wanted to speak on a little bit here. And I don't know if you guys have said this, but I really felt like Seth Rollins could have used the change of scenery. He's been on Raw seemingly forever, as far as I can tell. I do believe there was a time when he may have been on SmackDown, but I don't recall when that was. So I'm just going to go back, and Wade, you've covered it, but a few years ago, I remember Austin on his podcast would always talk about, like, who is Seth Rollins? And I personally thought he was maybe a little too hard on him, just because depending on, you know, how you're looking at it in the moment, you could pick a lot of people and say who is, you know, I don't know, who is Bobby Lashley, or, you know, just anyone, right? So, you know, to me, he was the architect, you know, and things like that. I thought that was kind of his deal there. But lately, I thought he found himself more as his character, just like this over-the-top, you know. I thought he kind of settled into what now this is going to sound bad, like all he does is laugh or something. But I just felt like he got comfortable in who he was. So, and just, you know, even maybe being the workhorse, maybe that's just, he was really growing on me lately in the last several months, even though I wasn't a fan of the face turn coming out of simply just because the audience was singing his song. I still thought he really built up a case for himself as a top star. So for me as a fan, the thing that would have really just put him all the way over to say, yeah, he's the man, give him another world title run or something, would just have been to move him to SmackDown to just be the final thing, kind of really freshen him up and say, yeah, he's arrived. So when they said Seth Rollins Raw, it just kind of just sucked the life out of the room for me. It was like, oh, this is going to be same old, same old. And the only thing that I think would justify keeping him on Raw would be to give him that new world championship, which now turns into, so what do we do with Cody? And I know you guys have been talking about Cody. But it just came into my mind, and here's my question that I'll ask is, have we considered – because I cannot see how – they don't see, just like a lot of us do, that giving Cody this new world title seems absolutely like secondary, and it's not finishing the story. This new championship, what story? Dusty never tried to win this thing. It wasn't around back then. Like, I don't know. It would be dumb to have Cody win this. It would make him feel like less than, in my opinion. So do we think that maybe Cody, they'll hold off until he wins either the Rumble again, which I don't know if that would backfire, or Money in the Bank, where he then has maybe a chance they'll challenge Roman. Do we think that's an option?
Well, I will say, as far as Money in the Bank goes, I don't know what I don't like a babyface winning Money in the Bank and then cashing in when the heel champ is beaten down or unaware. If he cashed it in by saying, I am calling my spot, it's this date, this city. It can be a PLE, it can be a Raw or SmackDown for that matter. I don't know if he can challenge Roman to a match on Raw, or if they would give that away. So logistically, I mean, you could take that approach with Money in the Bank, but I don't think he should cash in and just get a cheap win. I think they're going to save Cody for WrestleMania next year. I think they have it in their mind how they're going to steer Cody away without it looking like Cody has taken his eye off the ball. The fact is, he's on a different brand. So, again, I lay out the scenario. It's going to be what you had Lesnar attacking Cody when Cody had his guard down thinking Lesnar's going to be his partner. Next, maybe Drew McIntyre turns on him in the tournament, and then he feuds with Drew, and that can last months. And then there's someone else. You know, maybe he says, you know what, I can't challenge Roman. I respect Seth and what he's got going on as the champion. Maybe someday our paths will cross. But as much as I'd like to hold the world title, I know the world title I want. That it's part of my story. But another belt that people know I have a history with and an affinity for and means a lot to me is the IC title, the Intercontinental title. He gave a whole whole speech years ago about, you know, wanting to bring the old belt back and what it meant to him. So, you know, he could go after Gunther. I think there's a way to keep Cody busy, in other words, for the next 11 months or 9 months before the Rumble, and then have him win the Rumble, and everybody knows, all right, that's going to be his portal into getting a shot at the Universal title in Roman Reigns. So I'm not worried about that. I'm glad Seth's on Raw because I do think he's the best pick to be Raw champion or challenge a heel who wins the tournament and give Raw that centerpiece babyface that solves the issue, maybe solves it overstating it, but addresses the issue of it being a bad idea to have Cody win the belt. And you have to have top-tier babyfaces challenge for that title, whether they're whether they're holding the belt or the challenger. And I just don't know who else you reshuffle in this roster split to have somebody at Seth's level carry Raw. They need a top guy to placate USA Network. You know, I mean, the executives at that network don't want to think that they're not getting top stars on their brand. And, you know, by having Brock Lesnar be a free agent, for instance, it does give them the ability to say, hey, you know, both shows have possession of him, and whoever, you know, whatever makes sense in terms of a feud for him is what we'll go with. And that means Lesnar can be a challenger on Raw to Seth at some point, too, if they want to move into that position. Tom, anything you want to say about what I had to say or the specific question Jay had?
Well, Cody Gunther definitely intrigues me, and we already got a little bit of a preview of that in a big spot at the end of the Royal Rumble, so I like that idea. But regardless of what it is, Cody is pretty objectively number two on the overall WWE, not divided by division, power ranking list behind Roman Reigns. And so I have a high confidence level that they do, that everything you're saying is absolutely the case, that they do have a plan for how they are going to move forward with him. And I suppose I'll just corroborate, now that we know where everybody's going in the draft, I'll just corroborate some of what Jay was saying, because while I only really made predictions it's not about the predictions, it's about the sense of why does it make sense for somebody to go to a specific brand. I didn't do that so much outside of a handful of people going to or staying on Raw just because it made sense for the championship scene, for exactly what may be going on in their respective faction. And Seth was one of those people, but for the exact same reason Jay said, only because of the new championship belt. Now that we know everybody that's on each brand, what Brad said earlier is true. The men's side of, and let me look at the women's side. Just the men's side of SmackDown is, without a couple of turns, very heel heavy right now. And Edge, how much is he going to be around during the summer? So the top babyface becomes Rey Mysterio, and it would be Seth Rollins if he was over there and he has unfinished business with Roman Reigns. So looking up and down the what we now know is the SmackDown roster for the foreseeable future, it makes so much more sense to have Seth Rollins there were the new championship belt not a thing. So, I agree with Jay's analysis there.
Jay, back to you.
Thanks, Wade. I appreciate you guys' take on it. And Wade, I'm glad to hear you say that you're, I guess, leaning towards maybe seeing Cody, you know, win the Rumble again, because I just feel like they know that him winning this title is not the best way to finish that story. And so I'm thinking, how do you get back there? But I'm sure winning the Rumble again. And so now I'm going to – so I said a minute ago that winning the Rumble again may feel like – I don't know if that would backfire, if people would be as excited about it, but I'm actually going to, like, contradict myself, right? Because Cody has been so over and has remained over. And wait, I love you, right? I love you. I love everything you do. But some of the weeks, you know, kind of leading up to it, maybe even after WrestleMania, you would often bring up, you know, Cody's, I guess, maybe like ability to remain over. And, you know, as far as the Sammy thing, how is that going to work, that dynamic? And I feel like Cody has so much going for him from a standpoint of, and my wife actually reminded me of this because she saw Matt Riddle tonight and she goes, oh, he looks like Cody Rhodes. So she remembers being like this super, like not even casual level fan, right? But she always remembers Cody with no knee pads. So like she kind of took me back to like we've seen Cody grow up for our very eyes, right? You know, and then the fact that he left and, you know, maybe not on his own started AEW, but I always look at him as a guy who started it just on, you know, based on him going, hey, I'm going to fill up an arena in Chicago, this and that. He did all this, you know, and then he came back and he had the injury with the pec and he wrestled with that. I feel like he's done so much to earn our respect. And another thing that I think helps him out is when you look at, you know, especially the divisiveness sometimes amongst the fan base with AEW seeming like the cool place to be, right? The young, fresh upstart against the old, whatever you want to call it, WWE, right? And so to see Cody come like home, so to speak, is like, ah, you know, for those of you who thought AEW was so cool, well, look, we took like your top, you know, one of your top guys. So there's so much of that that I think that plays into what has Cody being over and how he's remained over. And I just wanted to call that out, that I think he's going to remain over. Like, I just, tonight, hearing the reaction, I feel like he's reached that level. I don't know if it's point of no return, but I almost feel like it's there. Like, fans are just not willing to boo him. The WWE fans have a lot of reason to embrace Cody. And just, I was telling my wife, like, oh, man, a few weeks ago, he said, earn it, I am it. Like, that line right there will stick with me for years. Like, Cody's just the guy right now. So if he does win the Rumble again, you know, I think I'll be fine with it. I thought like, oh, no, that's going to be – but you know what? Austin won it 3 times. So what if he wins again? The guy is over. He deserves it. He is it, as he said. So do you see any – I'll turn it into a question, right, so I'm not rambling. Do you see any chance of him kind of losing that, you know, what he's built up with the fan base here lately?
I think Cody, and I've always said, he's got so much going for him, a natural charisma, a connection with the fans. People see him as a genuine pro wrestling fan who would be a fan if he were physically unable to wrestle or, you know, whatever. I mean, like, I think people relate to him. He also can be his own worst enemy. He can meander. He can, you know, lose himself in platitudes, you know, kind of empty platitudes and get off course. And I think people saw that. And then, you know, you have a gender reveal party. You have weird sidebar feuds in the Codyverse. I always thought, and I said it, I think Cody would be better off in WWE where there's more structure, more editing, more parameters on promos. It doesn't mean don't let Cody be Cody, but an edited, more disciplined Cody with people looking at what he's saying and in steering him to stay a little bit more focused. I loved his backstage interview tonight. You know, it's just like, it doesn't sound scripted. It sounds like he's speaking from the heart. But you want to see that reaction. Sure. You want to get his thoughts on what happened. And so there's a genuineness to him, and there's an unoffensive ego I'm not quite sure what the term for it is. But Tom, do you agree with that Cody comes across as someone who's very sure of himself, and it backfired for a variety of reasons in AEW, but it works in WWE. And part of the reason is the fans who are going to boo Cody, peel off in our AEW fans, and the type of fans who are going to cheer Cody are glad he's in WWE home again and away from AEW. So it's not just one answer, but there is a likable ego that Cody has where there's this self-assured confidence, but he comes across as somebody who's confident at the expense of heels, at the expense of lesser people or people who don't, you know, you don't want to look up to. And he seems like somebody who would be really nice to you if you met him in public. And that says, I think that appeals to fans, and it doesn't even have to be true, although I think it is true, but that's how it comes across, that he's a guy who would just be nice to you off camera. And I think the fans who are cheering him sense that and like that about him. Tom, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, a bevy of points there. I do agree with the way the chips have fallen, particularly in regard to the fact that WWE has, just the way that WWE is produced, it has lent the necessary structure that was needed to the promo side of the Cody. I hesitate to use the word act. I very readily use the word act with most people, but that is one of the benefits, that this does feel like we are genuinely seeing Cody when he's out there. But yes, when he's doing the promos, it clearly went awry enough times on the other side of things that the crowd turned on him. I was going to say vehemently, and then reminded myself, oh, right, I don't tune into that regularly, so I can't get that specific about it. But To the extent that I'm aware of, yes, turned on him, and a lot of that had to do with the promo side of things. So to answer the question, I think what Cody's got to do to stay over, because everything else we agree is working in his favor, what Cody's got to do is find ways, and it's this part of it really isn't up to him, but the way I'm phrasing it, find ways to get meaningful wins that don't derail his ultimate goal. Because we're talking about him going up against Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar gives back the greatest thing about Brock Lesnar, and there are a lot of great things. Speaking of backstage segments, I loved when Adam Pearce said, "Hey, let's keep the peace tonight." And he just smirked and said, Brock just smirks and goes, "Yeah, good luck with that." Just fantastic.
yeah.
He gives back, Brock does. When it's time to give back, he will sell his butt off for you. So if it's time to do that for Cody, he will. I don't know if it's time for that 3 weeks into what seems like it's going to be a one-match feud, but I'm not positive if there's more fuel in this with Night of Champions coming right up. So then we're talking about the possibility of maybe Drew turning on him, and sure, that's playing a little bit more of a wild card that's happening a little bit further down, a few more weeks away. So it's harder to soothsay as much there, but a lot of what we imagine happening with Cody feels unwinnable. We're talking about the rise of Gunther. Ooh, well, it would be great for Cody to go up against Gunther. Well, I mean, they're two top guys, but do we really want Cody winning in that situation? I'm not, I guess I'd have to see it play out to decide what I would prefer in that case. But every single thing that we're imagining for Cody, the way I'm reading it in my mind, sounds like he comes out on the losing end in the match. And sure, he had apart from the injury, he had an extremely successful 2022, just win after win after win when we did get to see him. So the setback is a benefit to his character, and one of the reasons why I was in favor of him losing at WrestleMania. I felt like it was a good piece in the Cody puzzle. He's still on his journey. That was not the climax. That was just a major chapter in what will climax later. But he can't just lose the entire time. He's got to find ways to get meaningful wins without doing something like holding the placeholder championship.
Jay, anything else quick you want to bring up?
Yeah, I'll just say, I mean, let Cody keep talking. I'll say that for sure. I think about when he was in AEW, I hated the promo that he did when he colored his hair dark and came out and said, "Oh, you guys thought I was going to turn heel, huh?" I really get, go, leave, you know. But now he's at a point where I want to hear Cody talk. And that's not something I can say about everyone. It's something I can say about Roman Reigns. I can say it about Kevin Owens. Tonight, I said to my wife, I'm like, I hope he talks tonight. And I'm like, oh, he's not going to talk. And so by the time I saw his promo, she wasn't watching anymore. But when he speaks, I listen. And so that's something that he really has going for him. So real quick, I'll let you get to Kyle. It's kind of like, wait, when you ask people, do you have anything else? They say no, but yeah. So I got something for NXT now. I said no in the beginning. So have you guys touched on the fact that they seem to, with the backstage shots, the NXT superstars seem to be like out of kayfabe, right? And so I haven't watched the NXT quite some time. It's just not enough time during the week, and I'm trying to keep up with so many things. But I watched last week, and I understand either that Brooks Jensen team have kind of like broken up. I thought they officially broke up all the way. I saw one of the gentlemen, I think Brooks, trying to get Jensen like to come to his senses last week, like, oh, what's wrong with you? She's messing with you or whatever. And then tonight, when they drafted whomever it was in the moment there, those two were sitting next to each other, like they were attacked. And I'm like, wait, I thought they were. So now I'm thinking, all right, that's kind of taking me out of what they're trying to do. As someone who just watched NXT last week, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll see if I can catch it again tomorrow. And it's like, why are you throwing me all these mixed messages? I mean, it was nice to see the, you know, everyone happy for who got drafted, but it was also like, you could have done that in some WWE.com exclusive or something. I don't know. I didn't need the mixed signals with how I'm supposed to be looking at these superstars if you want me to get into NXT, if that makes sense.
Tom.
And there wasn't a question there, just more an observation, I guess.
Yeah, just was. Yeah, I was curious if Tom had a response, but I'm not hearing Tom at the moment, so maybe he muted himself. Well, anyway, Jay, appreciate the NXT comments. I will say one thing. I wonder if someday we'll find out, going back to what the last thing you said about Cody, if Paul Heyman had a lot to do with kind of focus, getting Cody more focused. I know there's writers, sure. There's all kinds of people who might be involved, but the Cody we're seeing was always there, even going back to WWE and in AEW, but there was just a lack of focus and discipline. There was some meandering. There was some unfortunate choices in wording. He would get meta at times, a lot of the time when he didn't need to. Or I thought it was counterproductive. So I don't know if Heyman would ever like publicly take credit, but if that were the case, because obviously he worked with him on the Roman stuff in the lead up to Mania and stuff, if Cody ever gave Heyman credit, that would be that would be interesting.
It really would.
So anyway, cool.
Thanks for taking my call, Wade.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Jay. Always good talking to you. All right, we'll try to get Tom patched back in here. I think we're trying to dial him up. In the meantime, we'll go to, I believe, Canada, maybe British Columbia. Go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, I'm Dustin Heyer. I'm from Spurwood, British Columbia. You're right.
All right, cool. Dustin, thanks for calling. Are you a first-time caller?
Yeah, first-time caller and a long-time subscriber, actually. It's probably WrestleMania 24.
Well, thank you.
You know?
Wow. Awesome. Well, thank you, first of all, and good to talk to you.
Yeah, I just everyone's talking about the new title. I just wanted to tell you my scenario. I really think this is the way they're going to go with it, is Cody will pin Brock at Backlash. Then Brock walks out of Crown Jewel with the new title. Then it'll be like Cody's like, then it'll set it up for SummerSlam, right? You got Cody versus Brock. Boom, you got your SummerSlam main event. In the meantime, Rollins, he wins Money in the Bank. And right when Cody's about to beat Brock for the WWE title, you know, Seth comes running in, foot stomp. So then you got, you know, you keep the chase going because that's what Dusty was all about. So I think they're trying to recreate it. So then Cody and Seth are go off and do Survivor Series. You know what I mean? They got the whole program. I just wanted to know what you think of that, or if I spoiled it for everybody already.
So I want to be clear, because I was also trying to reconnect Tom while you were talking. I missed just a couple seconds what you're saying in terms of my focus. You think Brock's going to win the tournament and then Cody beats him to win the title at SummerSlam?
No, I think Cody's about to win the title at SummerSlam, but Seth cashes in Money in the Bank before he does it. Then it's Cody chasing Seth all you know, after that, and Brock's gone.
And I think I don't know that they want, because then you would have Cody and Seth as baby faces, or are you turning one of them?
Oh yeah, I never thought about that, but I just imagine the baby face versus baby face.
Yeah, I mean, they could. I think they're gonna want to keep Cody away from this championship. But if they decide to have him in the champ, if they decide to have him win the title, you know, being involved with Seth and Brock elevates the title in the sense that it feels like a major situation if they're both involved. I just don't know. If you want Cody to be winning a title that isn't the title that he was going after with Roman, unless you have a really good, storyline.
I'm not saying he wins.
Even going after it.
Yeah, he keeps going after it, and then it leads you into Mania somehow. I don't know. And one thing I think that kind of tips off is...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one thing, too, is Hunter was like, we're going to get a guy, and he's going to go from town to town, and he's going to travel the world, and I think he's just trying to throw you off the scent a little bit. But and he did the same thing with the tag team draft situation. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No problem. I think there's a you bring up Hunter saying, oh, you know, it's going to be a fighting champion who we can be proud of. You can look at that as, okay, you know, it's going to, you know, whoever wins the title is going to be a babyface who's the defending champion as a contrast to Roman. But you can also look at it as a heel wins the title and isn't living up to that standard. And that's what causes the fans to rally behind the babyface chasing whoever is the champion. There are stories that they can tell where it isn't a giveaway that it won't be a heel who doesn't do Triple H proud and the Raw fans proud. So I think that is a possibility.
Well, thank you very much.
Justin, go ahead. Yeah.
Go VIP and have a good night.
Appreciate it. Call again, Dustin.
I will, Beth.
Excellent. Great talking to you. All right. We'll now move to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, what's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Yeah. So I think now that the draft is over with, I'm trying to go back to memory here what Ellen of everything from between Raw and SmackDown. And I was I think we're pretty even in terms of the draft, in terms of both brands. I was happy to see a lot of people drafted to a lot of women drafted to Raw that kind of needed it. I was glad to see, you know, that they're kind of boosting up the tag team division a little bit more now that they have Liv and Raquel on Raw. They have Shayna and Ronda and Katana and Kanan. I'm glad they get called up finally after being actually for a while. So I'm kind of glad to build the women's division more and the tag team division. But I think what I really was really excited about was seeing that Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch is on the same show. Because, like, I was hoping that would happen because they, you know, I gotta go back to last year when they teased that match headed into War Games, and I was like, oh, this is a really match I really want to see. So what do you think now about a potential feud now for Rhea and Becky in the future whenever her feud with Trish is over with, whatever that will be?
Yeah, I've got Tom back. Tom, what do you think about the – I mean, we had our inside correspondent say Rhea got the best – one of the better reactions of the night, way better than Dominic. She's got monikers that are framing her as a big deal. She's got a championship. She's a centerpiece part of this draft, bragging about being a top pick. Is a Ripley-Becky feud something that you'd look forward to?
You know, yes, in theory. But I'm not sure how much longer they can fight the tide or how much longer they want to. I don't think it's a fight that they want, like fighting the tide when they tried to have Becky as for so long. I'm not sure how much longer they're going to keep Rhea with the Judgment Day. I expected her to walk away from them night after WrestleMania. I expected her to get drafted away from them in the draft. Now that they're still together, does Bad Bunny defeat Damian Priest, and then she finally decides to walk away from them? They're doing fine as a male trio, and you know I like them remaining together right now to boost up Dominic because Dominic needs the other irritants by his side at the moment. Although week to week we can see how he's getting to a point where he'll be able to fly solo. But I think that's the major purpose the Judgment Day is serving right now. So I'm waiting for a point where, you know, Rhea Becky we'd be looking at that as a face-face match, and maybe that would work. But, you know, Rhea versus Ronda Rousey is something that I think is more intriguing. Rhea, do they want to do something like Trish Stratus sticks around and puts over Rhea Ripley? I'm looking at Rhea as a baby face sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Do you prefer a storyline that involves Dominic when it comes to her turning face, Tom, or do you think you kind of have you don't involve, like, it should, I guess this is what I'm getting at. Should Rhea Ripley turning baby face be about Rhea, or should it be about Dominic and Rhea, like, as a couple?
You know, the way I envision it is just a clean break. She just looks at him one day and says, you know what, you all are a bunch of losers, and just walks away. And there's no real fallout. I mean, Dominic is the type, though, where they could do the WWE male-female type of thing, not necessarily a match, but some sort of physicality where, you know, he doesn't actually get any strikes in. But I don't envision it, but it's an option. I mean, Dominic has worked in just about every way they've tried to get him to work, and the heat just grows. So while it's not something that I personally would lobby for, it probably would get over, you know, for as brief of a feud as it may be.
Yeah, you need Rhea dumping Dominic, not Dominic choosing someone else over her. But that doesn't mean Dominic can't immediately find another mommy, and that turns into a feud. I haven't. Is there anybody you'd like to be Dominic's new mommy the NXT sphere? Or
that is funny. You know what? Looking at the Raw roster as we know it to be now, I'm going to say Raquel. You know, she can turn heel. Maybe this is how she turns heel. And she and Rhea go back. You know, I already referenced the two of them being working partners with Casey Catanzaro for quite a long time there. The two of them were working the coconut loop for a long time. They know each other very well. And they could – that could be a good – I mean, I would personally – still put Rhea over in the end, of course, and bolster the title reign, but that could be something that causes Raquel to blip on more radars, like, oh, maybe there's something here more than what we're seeing.
All right, Akal, yeah. Back to you.
Yeah, I forgot about that, Rhea, Raquel, they did a test Rhea, and I do, like, that'd be a good match too, to see at some point, too, whenever she's done with the test with Liv and all that stuff. But, yeah, and I think going back to the whole Cody thing, the last call was so upset that Cody Rhodes didn't still. Actually, almost everyone is upset that Cody didn't win the championship at WrestleMania, and I am just sitting here just really shocked that people are really super that Rhodes lost at WrestleMania. Look, I just had I still don't get the hype for Cody Rhodes. I think people are just all hype from not watching AEW. I don't know what he's done. So I always say that before because. What I still viewed him as still a mid-carder, but just not someone who's not, he hasn't seemed that important to me or to be a world champion. That is Seth Rollins who's like that in my eyes. But I look at Cody, I'm like, okay, he's over because of his theme song. I'm really convinced he's super over because of his theme song. And the fact that he's just a shiny new toy, and he just came back from injury. People were just excited to see him because he has been around throughout last year. But they introduced this new title they created this title way before WrestleMania, so they had to feel that Ray's going to be champion for a while. Because if not, why create this championship if that wasn't the case of Reigns being champion for much longer. But I just don't see it. I still see Cody Rhodes winning it, at least not right now at Night of Champions. I still think it will be to Seth. I still think he will be in chase mode. And if he has to face Roman Reigns, like you said earlier, he probably will win Money in the Bank. Probably his option to go after Reigns, or God forbid him winning the Rumble again, which he could. But I don't think that should happen either. But but I just think for me, I think for me it comes off as just. He has a catchy theme music, but in terms of who he's going to feud with now on Raw, now that he's not, because it was Seth and then Reigns, but that was his top guy. So that's it. Just like you said earlier, could he have a feud with Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship? That could be interesting. Just beyond the, because we've seen top guys before, like Seth, like every other top guy doesn't have to go after the championship, go after, you know, mid-carders, I mean, being the mid-card for a while. So that's what he should have done the first time, but that's my two cents of Rhodes. I've been saying it for a while, but I think him not being champion right now is it going to be the end of the world that a lot of people talk about and other podcasts I listen to. So I'm still okay with it. I personally want him champion at all, but I don't want him as a world champion because it doesn't finish his story. I put that in quick quotation marks because it wasn't whatever. But I just feel like that doesn't finish his own story that he wants to go after Roman Reigns WWE champion, which he wants badly. So That's my two cents on that. Overall, that's it for my call. I'm happy for the draft for both shows. I think it'll be fun. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Kyle, if Cody wins the Rumble next year, are you going to start watching AEW instead? Is that going to be what it takes to get you to switch brands?
No. I'm still going to be watching WWE. So I watched WWE for the bad and for the good. I'm not going to stop watching it. You know, it irritates me for some of the stuff that they do because I'm not a fan of certain people. I'm still not going to stop watching it.
And why would you watch AEW? Like, is it just a time thing or loyalty to the WWE? Or is there something distinct about the presentation that differentiates it for you?
I just not really – there's because I think I only watch it only for Saraya, Tony Storm, and Ruby Riott. That's all I watch it for them three. Beyond them, I don't really care. They're gonna be at Baltimore Wednesday. I'm not even going. So they're gonna be in Baltimore for Raw in July, and I'm going to that. So it's that type of situation for me. I've been a WWE lifer since I was 11, and it's been like that for me for a while. It's all I grew up knowing, and I watch other wrestling shows, but it's not really for me. I'm like, it just reminds me of WWE. It's like I go back to that because that's what I'm used to. A lot of my people that I grew up watching, like Edge, or even as a teenager, like Becky when I was 18 when she was there, or whatever. Just new people that came out from NXT. I would watch NXT throughout my teens and 20s and all this stuff where people that are on the main roster now even got called up from tonight and Friday. That's what I grew up watching, who are like the oldest people that are that I've watched was Randy Orton, John Cena, Edge, Jeff Hardy, and I was in that that time period in wrestling. So, and then I just kept on going. Then I found out stuff from NXT, and then it just bled into more of them being in the main roster. Like, you have Owens and this person from NXT. So it's like, and now it's in the main roster. So that's what I've got used to and okay with. Even though sometimes Raw has been terrible for the most part for the last few years in like 2014, all that stuff, I still kept on with it because I'm a lifer, good or bad. I'm still going to watch it till the day I die, really. But that's it.
Well, Kyle, you're in good company because co-host Tom Stelf also not big on AEW. Is there anything, Tom, that can get you to switch?
No, absolutely not. And I was thinking while Kyle was speaking, because I would like to be able to think. I mean, I am thinking fairly. I'm just going to phrase it like, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, I would like to come off as though I'm thinking more fairly than it seems like I am, and be able to say like, oh, well, if these particular fundamental issues were addressed very thoroughly, then maybe I would consider it. But the fundamental issues that I feel that promotion has are how it identifies. It's what AEW is at its core is what I don't care for in modern wrestling. It's gotten so far away from what wrestling is. And I'm not saying that just because in the old days they did this and this and it worked then. You know, no, it's because of why wrestling was designed from the beginning to draw crowds, to draw money, to tell stories, to avoid injury. And now you have an entire company built on just the idea of going out there and doing every move you can possibly do, risking injury by doing crazy stunts that don't mean anything because you're not doing them at points in the story where you're getting maximum meaning out of them, where it's even worth risking an injury. And it's just, I mean, you know, you can, for different reasons, you can call WWE a billionaire's toy box, but for very deleterious reasons, I feel AEW is a billionaire's toy box. Good for the people who are taking advantage of that, people who either were never going to or no longer had opportunities in WWE and now are still earning a paycheck, hopefully without any risk to their careers. But there are a good number of people who I do think had WWE opportunities and are over there. And I'm greatly disappointed with them because I very, very seriously disagree with the philosophies that go into creating the product that is. I think the idea of a major competitor to WWE is a great idea, but what that company actually became, I think it's very unfortunate that it exists, apart from the fact that there are people that are earning good paychecks from it. And again, hopefully not getting too hurt in the process. So that's the one positive thing I can say there.
You sound like a Jeff Jarrett interview that I saw highlights of online, talking about how I make people feel when I'm in the ring, and there's not a lot of that around here with everyone doing moves. It was very interesting to hear Jeff sound off like that. But he was defending, you know, him getting TV time. He's like, hey, look at the reaction I get compared to others. It's different, and he's not wrong. All right, Kyle, any closing words from you?
The fact that the last thing I'll talk about is that I'm still surprised tonight that there's a pay-per-view on Saturday, because it feels like the draft kind of overshadowed the pay-per-view on Saturday. Yeah. But I'm still looking forward to it, and I'm also looking forward to next week to see how the new rosters will look and how what the new stories they could tell of both Raw and SmackDown should be fun in the next couple of months headed into the summer. So that's it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Kyle. Kyle brings up a good point there. Did they focus enough on Backlash? I mean, we're talking about the draft a lot, Tom, but did you come away thinking, oh, yeah, there's a pay-per-view or a PLE in 5 days? Did they drive that home enough? I think they did, but it is awkward with so much focus on the draft. But, I mean, I think they hit the points, you know, Cody and Lesnar. They got that across, the Judgment Day. Some of it's just SmackDown exclusive, so that's part of the issue. But, you know, they covered the lineup right before the main event. Where are you on that?
Yeah, if we're grading pass-fail, I would give it a pass, but it's more a more nuanced grade might be something like a B-. I mean, isn't Seth Rollins wrestling Omos at the show? And I think that maybe got a passing reference from commentary, but the two of them were involved in completely separate things.
Yes.
There was the issue
that
with the main
event.
That is a
good event. Point. They absolutely could have done more. They could have done more with that. Yeah. But, you
I
know,
mean, it's,
Austin
it's just,
Theory,
it's
you know, because of the draft, he wasn't here. Bianca and Io, they did a promo hyping that. Priest Bunny, they did video packages, and Priest talked about it. Ripley Vega, they covered. Cody Lesnar, they covered. And Bloodline against Riddle, KO, and Sammy. I mean, yeah, I honestly think they checked the boxes for me, other than, like you said, Omos and Seth, which was kind of weird, you know, that they didn't make that seem like, you know, I had kind of forgotten. It's weird. Until you mentioned it, I wasn't even thinking about that being a match on the show.
Yeah, and the EO thing is strange to me. As I said that sentence, it sounded like I just made a noise. The EO Sky, I should note to self, say full name when referencing EO. The EO Sky thing is strange to me because it seemed like it was – I mean, that's something – I would have put money on them getting broken up in the draft and like, oh, Bailey, we thought that you – you know, made sure that we were going to go as a group. Oh, oops, sorry, did I forget? Because it really seemed like they were heading for a breakup and that Bailey resented how things were going and that the two of – that Dakota and Io resented how things were going. And then 1 week, Triple H decided, you know what? Io Sky is being held back by this group and I just want to cut her loose and see what she can do as a singles act like she was in NXT for so long. So, I don't know, maybe it's just to build for the match, and it'll go back to where it was before, after Puerto Rico, but that's a strange one to me. But another one, suffering, and it got passed through briefly toward the beginning of the podcast, is that main event angle. You know, they're trying to build intrigue for the real storyline of that six-man at Backlash is – where are the Usos and Solo going to fall with one another? They got drafted to the same brand, probably for the purpose of prolonging this very intriguing long-form story. I do not expect that at sort of an off-month pay-per-view, for as novel as the Puerto Rico show is going to be, and I'm certainly looking forward to the presumable main event of Damian Priest and Bad Bunny. That should be fun, if for nothing more than the crowd reactions. But I don't expect a huge angle, just probably, you know, reminders of where everybody stands. And the reason the Bloodline loses is because of the rift between Solo and the Usos, or however that ends up falling. But Solo Sikoa, for not being someone who really lights me on fire all that much, and I don't mean to diss him. I mean, the talent is clearly there. Like, when Cody says, "Oh, you'll learn that you're not ready," there's something to that. But I'm not trying to backhand the guy too much here. But when you just look week to week to week, yes, there are heel shenanigans involved in most of his wins, but he's got single wins over like almost all of the biggest names on the weekly TV shows. And so, for as much as I will defend individual in a bubble, you know, screwy finishes on weekly TV because they've just got to fill the TV time and forward the storylines and match to match to match, I can usually understand why individual screwy finishes are done. They have not had a Solo Sikoa matches finish without him pinning his opponent very often, and he's racked up quite a laundry list of wins. So I was very intrigued to see what they were going to do between he and Seth. And there was, I know they were running out of time, but just everybody runs in and Corey gets cut off mid-sentence was a very disappointing way to end this, the Raw part of the go home for Backlash.
Yes. Solo, someone to watch. He is buoyed by his association with a really strong cast, Heyman, Reigns, and the Usos, and Sammy for a while too. And his job is to kind of be Hook, you know, in AEW. Well, this will be lost on you, Tom, but you know, Hook got over by standing around with his arms crossed, looking. But he got over in Team Taz because he stood around with his arms crossed, looking serious, but also humorless and not interested in humoring anybody. Is a better way to put it. And you know, so I'm intrigued by Solo's character trajectory because we don't know how he feels about much, and he might just be paying his dues and listening closely and has a whole bunch of opinions that he hasn't expressed about how Reigns treats people or how the Usos are acting and all that. So I think they have a lot of options, a lot of cards they can play with him in the ring. He's good, but I don't know that I see him as like someone I want to watch in a main event of a pay-per-view yet. So we'll see how that goes. Final topic comes in an email here from Alan. This is something having to do with the draft. Two aspects of it that we haven't talked about, and I hinted earlier, I want to get your take on this. So first up, again, Alan from Cambridge, Ontario, says, "I'm sure you've already talked about it, but not one team or faction split up during the draft. WWE's been great lately, and they built up a lot of goodwill, but they spent some of that with this draft. The major hook was what team will split up. They've been drafted Rhea separately from the rest of Judgment Day, and yet they still ended up on the same show. Crazy. And Omos and Brock are so valuable, they could have a contract that will allow them to show up whenever and wherever they want. Are we to assume Roman couldn't negotiate a deal, but Omos could? Weird. I'll add to that they announced free agents. You know, they're selling on television. Oh, free agents. It's who has powerful negotiators like Heyman or in the case of Omos, MVP, or Brock just has, you know, the power to flex his power. But Shelton Benjamin, Cedric Alexander, Elias, and Baron Corbin were announced tonight as free agents. And I can't remember who was – who were announced as free agents from SmackDown, but it was, I'll look it up here, but it's weird. Like, they did hype that teams would get broken up, and instead nobody got broken up. But we also have a draft where without any explanation, some lower card, mid card people also are free agents, which goes against the story they're giving about who are the free agent, the big name free agents. So Tom, those are key, you know, kind of key topics Alan brought up. Your thoughts on those points and also overall how you think WWE handled the draft. Zach Hadorn wrote an editorial earlier today talking about the draft, and his headline was, "I just despise the WWE draft." And he ranted about the format and the execution. So where are you?
Well, I guess I'll fall in the middle because it's at least better than having the CGI Fox robot jumping up and down as if he's actually supposed to be a part of the proceedings. That just drove me nuts. But you do lose something in not having the wrestlers come out like they did in the earlier incarnations of the draft. And my memory is hazy enough of those, and some of them, you know, a lot of the early ones happened in years where I was not actively watching the product, right? I had fallen out of regularity for a while there, so I'm not sure how long that stuck around. I wonder if it's maybe like our sometimes like our rose-colored glasses memories of the Survivor Series traditional matches, like, oh, Survivor Series has a rich history, and they never, it's like, well, no, actually, when you look at it, not particularly. I didn't love the format. It was very dry. I liked seeing Michael Hayes come out, but it was dry and straightforward and not very dramatic in either presentation where people went. And so I think we kind of need a day to look at the rosters and do things like when you suggested, oh, well, maybe Cody Gunter is a feud that could last a little while. Maybe Drew turns heel, and, you know, options like that might leap out at us, or people like, I'm still looking at a Bronson Reed who got drafted lower than where I had him on my depth chart. But he's somebody who really could benefit from this shakeup here. I don't disagree with where people have landed, even though I did expect a little bit more drama as far as, you know, Alpha Academy getting broken up or Damage Control getting broken up, you know, that kind of thing. If you asked me to put together my ideal presentation for the draft, I probably wouldn't come up with, you know, anybody's favorite version of it. I don't think I'm that person. But this one was inoffensive. Could have been juicier in both presentation and material, but I'm ultimately fine with it.
All right, very good. We will wrap up on that note. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, our callers, our emailers, of course, Tom, co-host, thank you so much. Great timing having you on again. And your NXT insight, along with other insight, but especially NXT, was really good this week.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad it worked out, and I'm not sure where I got cut off on. Oh, what?
Oh, you know, I was going to say, I feel like you covered this to a degree, but let's close with this. Who should people who don't watch NXT be most excited about or just excited about? Like, not that others who you don't list won't contribute, but how long is that list of people that fans should maybe start doing some research on or at least anticipate making an impact now that they've been called up?
Let's see, just going down my list here, Zoe Stark is someone that I have liked since she burst onto the scene. No idea how they are going to characterize her on the show, but I definitely see her as someone that they are going to want to present in a strong fashion who may, you know, if things continue to go her way, be looking at championship contention within a couple years. Very, very impressed with Zoe Stark. Indus Share, I mean, of course, you know, we all know Jinder and the million dollar arm, but Sangha he's been in a couple movies in Bollywood, mm-hmm. and he's just a freaking cool guy. There's just something about, he just exudes coolness. I liked him when he was just beating people up by himself, and then when he got put in this little faction, I was like, all right, cool, I'm on board with whatever Sangha's doing. So those guys will be brutes that just tear through people. Who else do we have here? Oh, of course, Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Covered them. They're very exciting. They've been on quite a journey with one another. And it's going to depend on the booking with Cameron Grimes. Who else do I have here? Pretty Deadly is going... You know, I almost hate to say that Pretty Deadly is going to be great at both the top of the card and in the lower card comedy stuff, because we then worry about them just getting stuck down there. But these guys are so committed to their ridiculous characters that I really do think that they're just going to be fun to watch no matter where they land, and they can do both. And then, of course, I saved for last on purpose Grayson Waller, because we gushed about him before, but it's worth repeating. Grayson Waller is a surefire star. He is the one out of all of these people to keep your eye on the most, and on the women's side of things. No disrespect to Indy Hartwell. I like her a lot, but it's Zoe Stark. And not sure where I got cut off with the Brooks and Jensen thing, but suffice to say, I like Brooks and Jensen. I figured they were going to end up coming back together at the end of it. Not as soon as they did, but they did already come back together, and I'm perfectly fine with that. They're a solid meat and potatoes tag team, and I expect them to remain so whenever they do get their own main roster call-up.
Excellent. Tom, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks, Wade.
Yep. Thanks, everybody, and we will talk to you next time.